Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
We are an inclusive faith community
seeking to live out the loving, just, and generous way of Jesus.
We are participants in a long tradition
that's less concerned with doctrines and dogma that demand total agreement,
but a life to be lived, enjoyed, and given away to others.
What unites us is a growing awareness that life is precious,
that we are made by love in order to love.
This community is comprised of and affirms the entire human family,
regardless of race, age, creed,
physical abilities, marital or economic status,
gender identity, or sexual orientation.
So, if you are curious and have come to see,
if you are tired and have come to rest,
if you are grateful and have come to share,
if you are wounded and have come to heal,
if you are joyful and have come to celebrate,
you are uprooted and have come to belong.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Hey, Crosspoint. So here's what I want to do today. I want to take some time to explore the practice of forgiveness. Now, I realized several weeks back that it's been a few years since I took a deep dive into this idea of forgiveness, and I found myself learning some new things about it since then because, frankly, more life has happened, right? And so it just seemed like a good idea to revisit this idea of forgiveness. And while I'm not sure about all of you, when I think about my own life and my own heart, when I reflect on a lot of the conversations I find myself in and how I see so many other people interacting with one another across the various touch points of life, I think we have to keep coming back to this idea and learning more and figuring out how to try to incorporate it into our lives. A couple weeks ago, a friend of mine came up to me and said, "You know how in our welcome home video here at Crosspoint, it says, if you're joyful and have come to celebrate, welcome home. Can we make sure that there's always space for that in our community?" And I asked it really sincerely and kindly, and not as some sort of critique in any way, but I thought a lot about that lately, even wrote about it some in our e-news a couple weeks ago, and I want that to be true in my own life, and I want it to be true in our community here at Crosspoint, and in some ways, it obviously is, but also I think when so much of what we're experiencing, whether it be in strained relationships with a parent or a partner or a child, or simply someone that we were counting on when things didn't go the way we hoped or expected, when it feels like so much can be hanging on by a thread and there's so much at stake, but it's mixed in with all this hurt and betrayal and apathy and disappointment and baggage from the past that now may be rearing its ugly head, these fault lines that were beneath the surface from long ago that now suddenly shift and show up. It can feel exhausting and unsettling. And on top of that, when we're confronted with different injustices all around the world that matter deeply to us, or we're bombarded with political and faith-centered rhetoric that feels so toxic and maddening, and yet we find ourselves encountering friends and loved ones who seem to feel the exact opposite way than we do, and it causes us all sorts of confusion and reorientation about what we thought we knew about those relationships, and then trying to figure out if there's a healthy way forward, if there's any reasons for hope when it feels like that there's a lot against it. And when we find ourselves in the midst of these kinds of circumstances, joy can feel rather elusive at times, even a bit naive, like somehow we're not paying attention and we're burying our heads in the sand if we let ourselves experience joy. And yet, we know that's not good, right? We know that's not healthy. We know it. Deep down, we know it, but it doesn't make it any less elusive at times. In their book, The Book of Joy by Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama, they spend a lot of time writing about how the practice of forgiveness is so critical to experiencing joy. In the book, when one of them was asked, "What do you say to people who say forgiveness seems like weakness and revenge seems like strength?" And Tutu responded, "I would say that those who say forgiveness is a sign of weakness haven't tried it." I think that's true. I mean, it is incredibly hard work But most importantly, forgiveness is critically important work that we're invited into, because so much about not only how we experience joy, but so much about how our entire hearts and how we do relationships and how we show up in the world depends on it. Now, up front, I want to acknowledge that whenever the idea of forgiveness comes up in the context of a church, sometimes it can drag up really painful and tragic experiences. And we end up feeling guilty the whole time that we're listening, because while the idea of forgiveness may sound all sorts of high and lofty and spiritual, it doesn't actually feel practical or possible or, frankly, even something that we may even want to do. And so up front, I want you to hear me on this. I want you to know that for some of you, I don't think it might be best for you to try to forgive right now. That it might actually not be helpful, that perhaps there's still a lot of trauma and wounding and deep betrayal that has to be processed. And so you're not going to just hear me flippantly say, you know what, just no matter what happened, just accept it and move on and forgive, because you know what, you're obligated and it's what's best for you. In my opinion, in a lot of religious contexts, people can get shamed for struggling to forgive. And I've never really seen that to be helpful. Rather, based on my experience with walking with people in deep pain for really about the past 30 years now, I just don't think that it's always the case that that's the best way to go. And then furthermore, as we look into this idea of forgiveness, I think it's worth noting that how we tend to talk about forgiveness in our culture today is often somewhat different than what we find in the scriptures. Doesn't make it wrong, just makes it different. For example, in the Old Testament, the dominant metaphor for forgiveness was a weight or a burden that was lifted off of someone else or lifted off a community of people as a whole. And then you fast forward several hundred years into the time of Jesus in the New Testament, and the dominant metaphor for forgiveness that we find in the stories and the teachings there becomes more of an economic one. The idea of canceling someone's debt. But today in our culture, when we talk about forgiveness, we often talk about the personal benefits of forgiving someone, the healing it does in us to forgive. You've likely heard the cliche idiom by now that choosing not to forgive someone is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. You see, the focus tends to be on what happens in our own hearts. So all that to say, none of these different perspectives are wrong. They can all be right. They just give us different insight into all the nuances of the idea. So as usual, I'm indebted to a lot of people for their insights that I've been reading and listening to and trying to put this all together. Scholars and authors like Gary Anderson and Lewis Smedes and Rob Bell, Richard Rohr, the Book of Joy that I already mentioned, all in this better attempt to try to wrap my arms around this idea in a way that could be helpful for all of us. And I think perhaps the best way for me to try to address it today is to simply offer some thoughts and reflections on what forgiveness isn't, and then we can talk about what forgiveness is. And even though we find all these ideas rooted in biblical wisdom, I'm not going to try to unpack a scriptural passage around each one. Rather, I'm just going to try to cover as much ground as I can. And that hopefully, by coming at it from several different angles, we can all walk away, hopefully, with something that's beneficial. So perhaps maybe grab a pen or paper, maybe pull out your phone or just type on your laptop, maybe take some notes, and let's lean in together here for the next few moments. So first, here's some of what forgiveness isn't. Forgiveness isn't something that someone pressures you or guilts you into. Now, it seems odd that we have to be reminded of that, but in my experience, it's necessary. If someone who hurt you is pressuring you or guilting you into forgiving them, or if the person pressuring you to forgive someone else has an emotional or financial or sympathetic connection to the one who injured you, then it might very well be the case that the one who is advising you or pressuring you, they might not actually have your best interest at heart. So what may be best for you and your heart is to put the brakes on that and to slow down. Because ultimately, forgiveness may be the best gift for yourself and the world around you, but honestly, the timing may not be best right now. As I mentioned earlier, there may be other things that you need to sort through first. Maybe that takes a while, but it should come at a time when it's actually a gift you freely choose to give, never one that you were manipulated into. Manipulated or pressured or guilted gifts never actually feel like gifts, do they? whether it's a gift to yourself or to others. So don't be pressured or guilted into forgiveness. And specifically, don't let people try to pressure you because of your faith, where it comes off something like, well, aren't you a Christian? I mean, you have to forgive me. Or you have to forgive this other person if you're a Christian. Because honestly, that's just gross. And it's manipulative. And it has nothing to do with the way of Jesus. And it's in no way looking after the best interest of your own heart. Okay, here's another. Forgiveness is not condoning what someone did or pretending that it really doesn't matter, that what they did really doesn't matter. See, often forgiveness begins with being willing to name how someone wronged you or hurt you. It's not approving or condoning what they did. It's not pretending that it didn't actually hurt or wound you. It's not downplaying it while saying, you know what, oh, it's no big deal, if it actually was a big deal. You see, forgiveness isn't about dismissing the injury or even quasi-agreeing that it was okay when it happened, when it's not okay. Forgiveness starts with honestly acknowledging what happened and the pain that was caused. Otherwise, it just turns into some attempt at checking off some pseudo-religious box or catering to a version of some lofty spirituality that doesn't actually help and that tries to deny reality. And that's never helpful. So here's another thing forgiveness isn't. Forgiveness is not dependent on someone admitting or apologizing for what they did. If you find yourself waiting around for someone to admit what they did, how they hurt you, if you're waiting around for someone to apologize for their actions or words so that you can move on, you have to embrace that day may never come. Sometimes it's not even possible. Maybe that person has passed away or no longer be able to even have any contact with them. See, we can't make forgiveness ultimately held hostage by what someone else does or doesn't do, by what someone else says or doesn't say. Now, that may be necessary for restoring a relationship. It may be necessary for restoring confidence or trust with that person, but it's not essential for forgiveness. Now, granted, it may be very helpful. It may help speed up the process, but forgiveness isn't dependent on what someone else does or doesn't do. Another thing, forgiveness is not taking away consequences. Sometimes we assume that if we forgive someone, it means we erase the possibility of any consequences for what they've done, or that we shouldn't even want any consequences to happen to someone else. But listen, that's not true. Here's the thing. You may need to forgive someone and still call the police. You may need to forgive someone and they still end up going to jail. You may need to forgive someone, but they still are held responsible for their actions. And this is important, not consequences in the spirit of revenge or getting them back or making them hurt like they hurt you. That's vengeance. But rather in the spirit of accountability and justice and the safety and protection and love of yourself and of other people. So we just have to be reminded, forgiveness doesn't equate to zero consequences. Another one, forgiveness is not forgetting about what happened. Now, I think this one is important, especially in a religious context, because it comes from a religious idea that when God forgives, God also forgets. And this particular idea really comes from two similar passages of scripture where you have these two Old Testament prophets, Isaiah and Jeremiah, and they're using all sorts of figurative language to call out the arrogance of Israel. And they find themselves speaking for God in this prophetic voice, saying to Israel, "For I will forgive their wickedness and remember their sins no more." So that's where this idea comes from, right? I will remember their sins no more, that God forgives and God forgets. But I want you to notice that Isaiah prophesies something very similar when he writes, "I, even I," speaking for God, "am he who blots out your transgressions for my own sake and remembers your sins no more." But notice what immediately follows after that. Review the past for me. Let us argue the matter together. State the case for your innocence. Your first father sinned. Those I sent to teach you rebelled against me. Now, there's a lot of context there that's going on in that particular passage that we don't have the time to unpack, but I want you to notice something, right? Because rarely do you hear anyone seem to quote those next sentences after God says, I'm the one who remembers your sins no more. But notice it says, God says, now remember in the past, your first father sinned and those I sent to teach you rebelled against me. Well, that apparently shoots the whole God forgives and forgets thing in the foot right in the very next verse, because apparently it seems God does in fact remember the past. And yet many of us have been taught to feel guilty because we can't seem to forgive and forget like God can. That somehow we're disappointing God and falling short of some holy measuring stick of our faithfulness that we're not able to do this. But even logically speaking, it doesn't make any sense that an infinite, all-knowing God can forget anything, right? I mean, think about that. That doesn't make rational sense. And even if we don't embrace that idea, it would be a very warped God, right? Think about this. If God got to do a magic trick that essentially wiped God's mind clean of something that allows God to forget, and yet, you and I don't have the same power. We don't have that same ability, and yet we're expected to forgive and forget without any insight or ability to do this same magic trick on ourselves. I mean, it doesn't make logical sense. But you see, when we do think about it, grace and forgiveness are much more powerful realities when someone can forgive, yet also remember. Where we can remember, but we can also freely choose, you know what? You don't owe me anymore. I'm no longer holding you in judgment for that. That is grace. That is powerful. Forgiving yet still remembering allows us to also at times to put necessary healthy boundaries in place where you can forgive someone who abused you, but you shouldn't forget what happened, where you put yourself or others in harm's way over and over again, right? So we have to keep reflecting on that idea that it doesn't mean that you just forgive and forget, because there's a lot of power in being able to remember. Which leads to one more thought. Forgiveness is not necessarily going back to the way things were. Sometimes we struggle with this because it can feel counterintuitive to love. And so we beat ourselves up over not being able to be loving enough if we don't think it's possible for things to go back the way that they were. And then sometimes others beat us up where it sounds like, well, I thought you loved me. I mean, what's your problem? Why can't you just drop this and move on? Just forgive me. Let's get things back to the way that they were. Here's the thing though. You can forgive someone, and at times it's not wise for things to go back like they were. You can love someone and still have limited contact with them. You can forgive someone, and in some cases, it may be wise or even best for you not to speak to them again. But I also have people in my life where there's had to be a clear conversation that certain topics are just off limits when we're together, where you establish a healthy boundary and you're like, listen, I love you. I know where you're at on this, but it doesn't do our relationship any good to engage in this particular topic. There's other things we can talk about, but I'm no longer going to discuss this topic with you. And if they bring it up again, you can be like, hey, remember, this is a boundary I've put in place. This isn't a topic I'm willing to discuss with you. Please respect that. Things don't go back to the way that they were. And understand, that's not being mean. Sometimes that's just wisdom. It's guarding your own heart. It's fighting for a way for the relationship to move forward. Because forgiveness doesn't necessarily mean things just go back to the way that they used to be. So there's some thoughts on what forgiveness isn't. Now, next, what I want to do is I want to offer you some observations about what forgiveness actually is. And while I've tried to make sure and offer plenty of disclaimers and cautions about what forgiveness isn't, I don't want any of us to lose sight of that you and I choosing to forgive someone could potentially be the most transformative experience in our lives. It could change the trajectory of our life and the story that we find ourselves living if we're willing to lean into that. And so with that in mind, let's talk some about what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is a gift that you give yourself and sometimes that you give someone else when you're ready. It's something you step into when you decide you're ready to start trying to let go of the contempt and bitterness. And hear me on that, because that's important. It's when you're ready to start to try letting go. When you decide, those are steps that you want to start entering into. And that's because of this second thing that's true about forgiveness, and that is that forgiveness is a process. It's a journey. And it's unique to each of us. There is no formula for forgiveness. Because you see, forgiveness isn't a feeling. If you're waiting around for a feeling where someday this warm, fuzzy feeling just sweeps over you, where all of a sudden this feeling comes over you where you no longer remember anymore, where it just no longer bothers you anymore, you're going to be waiting a long time. Rather, forgiveness is a choice. It's a decision. And rarely is it one, this one-time decision where you simply move on. Rather, it's a choice that you and I have to keep making over and over again. It's something that we practice and we keep practicing. We have to practice being someone who forgives. Maybe you find yourself in a place where you thought you had forgiven someone, but suddenly their name comes up, or you see something that triggers a past wound in you, and you feel this tightness in your chest and this anxiety wells up in you. When that happens, understand that's not an opportunity to beat yourself up about it. Rather, it's an opportunity to practice again what it looks like to be someone who is learning to practice forgiveness. You see, that's what being gentle and patient with yourself looks like when you understand that it's a process. For some of us, simply waking up to the reality that we may need to forgive someone is an important and necessary step in the process. And if you're battling a wound that has festered for a long time and are just starting to wake up and name the reality of not only what happened, but where you want to start to try to go, that's a step worth celebrating. And maybe if you find yourself waking up tomorrow a little less ticked off at the person than you did the day before, you can celebrate that. That's a step. There's all sorts of different points along the journey of forgiveness, and the process and length of time is unique to each of us, but you'll know you're getting fairly far along on the journey when you can find yourself sincerely not wanting to see the other person suffer, to not see them destroyed in some way, when you no longer find yourself holding something over their head that you're waiting to spring on them to show that you have the moral high ground. Again, doesn't mean no boundaries. Doesn't mean that there's not necessary consequences for the actions. To try to help them wake up, to try to help protect potential unhealthy and destructive behaviors from injuring others and even protect them from themselves. It doesn't mean no justice, but it's about our hearts not being filled with contempt and revenge, where we find ourselves doing what is just wishing pain and destruction on them. And still, that can take time because it's a process. It's not a one-time thing. It's about continuing to take steps in our life to help us try and become a person who practices forgiveness. Here's another. Forgiveness is choosing not to give someone else control of your joy and peace. Now, I don't think this is something we deliberately decide, but often we can carry with us this sense that holding on to bitterness or contempt is somehow punishing the other person, that it's making them suffer. When the reality is, all we're doing is giving them control over our inner world and our peace and our own joy. Again, as I mentioned earlier, if you're waiting around for an apology before you forgive someone, if you're waiting around to get someone to give you something that you think you're owed before forgiving them, you're giving someone else power over your own heart. You're essentially saying, okay, this other person gets to decide when I'm free of this contempt raging inside of me. This person gets to decide when I get to be happy? And we find ourselves repeating questions like this over and over again in our head. How could he do this to me? How could she do this to me? When the reality is, he's already done it. She's already done it. And many times we find ourselves expecting things or trying to get something from them that they can't give us. That they can't go back and give us another start to their relationship. They can't go back and give us years where things went sideways. They can't go back and give us a different childhood. They can't. The reality is, it's already done. Instead, what's helpful is for us to empower ourselves to take steps. To stop thinking of ourselves as completely powerless and to choose to take steps that help us start to take back control of our own inner world, to put up boundaries where necessary, to get out if necessary, to confront if necessary, to say, I want to choose for my own heart to be free, and start to wrestle through what that looks like rather than letting the one who injured me dictate all of that. I'm not waiting around for them to give me something that I think I'm owed. Rather, I'm taking control of my own heart and choosing to forgive. And this is where the economic metaphor can be really helpful. It's I'm choosing that they don't owe me anymore. Because otherwise, if that's my mentality, it puts my heart in their control. But instead, it's I'm choosing to take back control of my own heart. To liberate my own heart, not being passive and waiting around for the one who injured or betrayed me to do it for me. And there's something in us that has to wake up to the illogical nature of giving up that type of control, that type of critical control of our own heart to somebody else. We have to be willing to take responsibility for our own hearts. Yet, understand, it can sometimes be very tempting to hold on to bitterness because in our own mind, it gives us an excuse of why we can't be happy, why we can't have peace, because it allows us to always have someone else to blame. But if I choose to forgive, then I can't rely on those excuses anymore. I have to take responsibility for my own heart and my own happiness. And so it's important to understand that sometimes one part of the resistance we may face when it comes to forgiving is that it could take away our excuses of why we've convinced ourselves that we can't be happy. And that's hard. And it can be scary. But it's also the only way we can actually be free and take back control of our own hearts. Here's another thought. Forgiveness is trying to see others' humanity and extending to others what you most want for yourself. One of the things that allows contempt to grow roots in us is that we dehumanize people. But when you can search for commonality with others, it opens the door for grace and for mercy. When you can start to see people as scared or desperate or hurting, it makes it easier to connect with their humanity because you can remember times you felt that way. And when you said or did things that you regret. When you can embrace that sometimes people just flat out don't know something. They genuinely don't understand. That they don't have context or that they have been shaped in a context and an environment that has kept them from knowing anything different. Where the most important people in their lives told them or taught them that this is how things are. When we embrace that, other people can start to become more human. Because we can understand what it's like not to have all the information, to be shaped by a particular perspective in the home or the cities or the churches we grew up in or around. And we did and we said things that we look back on now and feel kind of foolish about, but we evolved. We stayed on a journey. We kept growing and learning. And so we have to wrestle with, can I give others the time and space to evolve as well? And can I give them some grace along the way? As was given to me, and that I hope continues to be given to me. Because I don't know about you, but I have a lot more to learn and to grow in, and I'm hoping for more grace and space to learn and evolve, and that's what we all want, right? For people to be patient with each of us. We all want to be treated with dignity, to have someone lovingly come alongside us, to try to help provide a different viewpoint rather than simply attack us. Jesus said, it all boils down to love your neighbor as yourself. Extend to others what you most want for yourself. It really is as simple as that. It is not easy by any stretch, but it is simple. Another thought. Forgiveness is directed toward an individual, not a group or an organization. Now, I can't spend a lot of time on this, but I think many of us find ourselves simmering with anger at certain groups of people, political groups, religious groups. We find ourselves angry at institutions like the government or Christianity or evangelicals or Republicans or Democrats or the media or corporate America or people of one particular race and or ethnicity. And many of us carry around all this anger and we can't find any way to deal with it. Because the reality is, you can't forgive organizations and groups. You can't forgive systems. You have to actually deal with a person. But the thing is, we can get addicted to staying mad because it makes us feel like we're doing something when we're actually not. And part of the great divide happening in our culture right now, especially politically and religiously, is that when someone in a group does something or says something that is infuriating, even if they're on the extreme edge of that group, the way many of us direct our anger is to the entire group. We lump them all together and we lash out at all of them. We hold them all in contempt and disgust. And as a result, you have entire groups of people feeling attacked and threatened and lashing back out themselves. And that deep anger and contempt just simmers in all of us so much of the time. Some of us were just angry all the time with certain groups of people. And yet, when we try to deal with the bitterness and rage and contempt inside of us, we can't, because it's directed at a group, an organization, a system. But forgiveness has to deal with a face, with an individual. So if you find yourself walking around these days with this tornado of contempt swirling in you toward a group of people, I want to invite you to focus in on an individual and start there. If there's a friend or a family member that fits into one of those categories of people that you can find yourself constantly being embittered and disgusted by, where you don't really even see them as a person anymore, you just see them as a representative of a group that you're filled with contempt for, if forgiveness is something you want to try and practice, try pulling it down to a specific individual and deal with your heart toward them specifically. And that's not to say that toxic ideologies and systems don't need to be confronted or dismantled. But that's not where the work of forgiveness lives. It lives with individuals. One last thought. Forgiveness is choosing to stop contempt, revenge, disgust, hate, and violence from continuing to cycle throughout the world. Because often the reality of what happens, these things, they just keep circulating. They become part of the narrative, part of the story. Someone says something nasty about you, and you find a way to say something even nastier back. Someone hurt you, let you down, disappointed you. And in turn, you find these subtle ways to keep punishing them, giving them the silent treatment, making them walk on eggshells. Someone comes after your perspective in an attacking, threatening way. You find a way to escalate the rhetoric by coming after them to make them feel small and threatened. Someone fires the first shot, we fire back with something bigger. You see, there's this mentality that we can default to that somehow, if we can just keep, bombing our way to peace eventually. And sometimes we do that figuratively, and sometimes we do that literally. And that happens at the individual level, and it happens at the global level and the national level. Now, hear me on this. I'm not naive to the fact that there are different tensions and realities and considerations when you're dealing with governments and nations and systems. It's incredibly complex. Yet, I do think that when we lose sight of actual human faces, actual individuals, and we just look at them as a group or a nation, and as we just talked about in the last point, and we declare them to be an enemy, to be eliminated, we lose our capacity for creativity and imagination when it comes to peace and love, and we lose sight of the actual individuals affected. And yet, I think a lot of us get caught up in that type of my team must defeat your team mentality, and I have to make sure I'm on the winning team. that it carries over into our everyday interactions with people. And if things are ever going to change, someone has to be courageous enough. Some group of people has to be courageous enough to refuse to let destructive things continue to circulate in the world, to be part of the ongoing narrative, to let contempt and disgust and violence keep bouncing back and forth like some kind of hate-filled tennis match. Someone, some group has to say, no more. But here's the thing. When you do that, it may very well look like you've lost. If you refuse to keep the nasty back and forth going, it may look like to some other people that you've lost. Someone comes after you on social media and you finally stop responding. It may very well look like to the other person and to those observing the comment section or stalking the comment section like, oh, he shut him down with that one. Put him in his place. No comeback there. Maybe you went through a divorce or a breakup and your friend group is deciding who they're going to side with. And if you stop arguing your case with your friends, slandering the other person, making all sorts of other points about why the other person should carry most of the blame, if you stop arguing your case, they may only hear the other person's case and they may only hear all the condemning reasons from their perspective why you're the one at fault. And because of that, it may look like you've lost. People may be grossly and wrongly critical of you, and when you don't fire back, people may assume that it must be true because you don't keep playing the nasty tennis match, and with it may come pain and hurt and isolation. But if things are ever going to change, we have to stop keeping the disgust and hate and violence and contempt in circulation. Which is one of the reasons that the death of Jesus on the cross sits as the central idea to this story that we belong to. To this 2,000-year-old tradition and story that we're walking in. It's because Jesus chose to stop circulating the violence that was being done to him. Instead, he chose this path of sacrificial love, of forgiveness, of refusing to throw back the contempt and the disgust being hurled at him. And to many, it looked like he lost. So perhaps, in the midst of various things that come to mind when we think about the symbol of the cross of Christ, perhaps we can add to the list a question that when we see it, when we reflect on it, when we think about it, we'd ask ourselves, can we let the violence stop there? That when we look at the cross, we can ask, can we let the violence stop there? Am I willing to participate in a story that lets vengeance and hate and contempt and violence continue to circulate? Or will I participate in the kind of story that Jesus modeled, where love and courage, forgiveness changed things and continues to change things if we let it? Here's the things, friends. I'm not sure if there's a more powerful gift than forgiveness. And if we're honest, it's something we often want for ourselves, but we can be resistant wanting others to have it. Even if it means that our own hearts start growing cold and hardened in the process. And so, again, with all the disclaimers in mind that I've already mentioned, what would it look like for you to actually choose to start to forgive someone that you need to forgive? Because yes, sometimes that still means that things don't go back the way that they were. But sometimes it means relationships grow back even stronger and more resilient and more beautiful. And those can be stories worth fighting for when possible. Yet those stories don't happen by accident. They don't just magically happen. They happen when you and I choose them. But regardless of what relationships may or may not be affected or how they may or may not be affected, what it does mean is choosing the story of forgiveness means choosing to liberate your own heart and choosing to participate in a more beautiful way to live in the world. And honestly, life is just better that way for you, for me, and for the world. So friends, Here's to moving forward with a better vision of what forgiveness isn't and what it is. And may we all be better and participate in better stories with the way we live because of it.
If you would like to know more or get connected to Crosspoint, go to crosspoint.org. If you're in need of care or assistance, go to crosspoint.org/care. And welcome home.